Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. You're tuned in to the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. My name is Kingsley Kipuri. As usual, I'll be your host for the next hour. I was away last week. I'm really, really happy to be back. I'm just trying to figure out who Cecil the Lion is and what on earth is going on with that. So hopefully some of our guests can tell me what's going on there. But anyway, to come to this week's show, we'll be talking about Women's Month, which is just starting off, and what on earth it means for us now in 2015. So we've got a pretty great show lined up. I'm joined by my usual partners in crime, Greg Nicholson and Fatima Matiba. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Fantastic. And now to actually just introduce you to our guests. We've got quite an esteemed group of people here. So just to actually tell you who they are. So first is Kavuli Nyali, the editor-in-chief of Good Hair Diaries, and is part of a movement or organization known as the Feminist Stockville. Welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm quite curious. What is the Feminist Stockville? What is that about?
You know, Feminist Stockville is just black girl slang, but actually it's a collective of 8 women who are mainly focused on the social issues that affect black women. And we've used hair initially to kind of move ourselves into the market, and it's moved on to film screenings and readings and panels and all kinds of stuff we really don't box ourselves in.
Okay, well, that's only half of what you do, right? The other half is the actual, is the good hair. And what is that? Is that you as an individual? Is that the Stockville? What is a hair consultant? What's that about?
So basically, women come to me for advice on their hair. Black women come to me for advice on their hair specifically. Okay. A lot of us are struggling. We've got hairline issues, if you haven't noticed. So I have my hairline. And I'm basically teaching women how to take care of their hair and how to wear their own hair proudly and healthily.
Okay, I'm quite interested in how you said you used like hair as almost an entry point with the Stockville. I really want to hear more about that.
So. Okay.
But now to our next person we have in studio here. We have Anele Nzimande, a contributor for Vanguard Magazine, also a law student. Anele, you write a lot about gender issues and sort of what feminism is now to you. And how did you find yourself in this space when you're writing, thinking, and almost being a thought leader on these issues?
I think, you know, you think about your experiences, and oftentimes as a woman, you think because someone is already saying it, you don't need to say anything. Someone will say it for you. And I think it's largely because it's just about finding your voice, using your voice, and trusting your own voice. A lot of the time we delegate that responsibility to the people that are already in the media. And I got a call from Panache. I really don't remember the story quite well. And I know we hadn't met before. So before we met in person, we had a Skype conversation. She got my numbers from somewhere. I think it started on Twitter. Mm. So Twitter has become a really interesting space where you can meet people and make really meaningful connections. And she said, look, I think you have something interesting to say. And I said, no, I don't think so. I don't think I have anything new to say. Yeah. You know, someone's already saying it. Yeah. And I think that also speaks to just the confidence issues that we sometimes have as women, where you know that you're dealing with something, but you really struggle to find that voice, you know, to talk about it yourself. You think it sounds better in somebody else's voice. And she's an amazing person because I've been able to overcome that, to the point where now I can write. Cause I think it's different to talk about issues. When you write about them, you know, it's like they're cast in stone.
You can't take it back.
Yeah, you can't take it back. And Tabiso says that, Lebo Mashile says the paper never forgets. So if you put it down on paper, it's there for everyone to nitpick and you know, destroy and whatever, you know, and it's quite an intimidating thing to do, to write in general.
I hear you. I saw, Kavuli, I heard you nodding when we're talking about
Twitter.
I heard you nodding. Yeah. When we're talking about Twitter and how that's really become a place where it feels to me, there's almost a movement that's, I don't know if it's formed on Twitter or if it's most expressive on Twitter, but there seems to be almost a movement of sort of young black feminists that are really coming together. Is that a real thing, or is that just me as an outsider's perspective?
It is a real thing. I do think that women are finding, black women are finding their space on Twitter. But a lot of us are actually taking it off of Twitter and really doing something with it on the ground. So mm-hmm. I think that's the most important thing to do. But a lot of people use Twitter as a sounding board. People say rubbish on there. People say real things on there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to think. And we were arguing about this before the show, where I asked a silly question. At least your face told me it was silly. I feel like feminism has become very in vogue and very sexy, and with sort of the likes of Beyonce self-proclaiming as feminist and so on. And I feel like it's become sort of a cool thing to do. At least cool thing to associate with, you know, verbally. Yeah. Do you feel that's true? I'm seeing a lot of frowns. And then B, if so, do you feel like it's maybe poppiness or pop culturalization is maybe causing a rift between the coolness of it and the realities of what a women's empowerment
is? I'm going to be controversial and say, if it's cool, yeah, then that's fine. Okay. If it's pop culture, then it's fine. Because for some people, that's what it needs to be. It needs to be cool first before they can subscribe to the ideology.
Okay. Right.
And, you know, like she says, the hair is an entry point, and, you know, you need to be innovative. You need to be creative as to how to introduce certain ideas to people. And I think if it's sexy and avant-garde and all those kind of things, and then you can initiate the conversation afterwards, that's perfectly fine in my view.
It has to get people's attention. However we do that, as long as it's true to self, it is fine. But to say that it's cool, I don't feel that on the ground. Like, I get a lot of kickbacks from men who don't understand what feminism is, especially black feminism. We don't hate men. We actually need you. We need you to support us. We'd like you to support us. So I think, just as Anele said, if it's something that is, you know, trendy, that's fine. As long as I can get into your head from that entry point, we'll get to, you know, getting rid of your chicken-headedness later on.
And yeah. I think, I mean, we have been silenced for long, you know. If you were watching Our Perfect Wedding, and I watch it on Twitter all the time. And this past Sunday,
I watch it on Twitter. Did anyone notice?
Yeah. I don't have a TV, unfortunately. That comes with being a student.
You can watch it on Twitter. That's the thing.
It's amazing. So, the bride, I think, one of their aunts was speaking at the wedding and was saying, you need to be quiet and open up down there. Yeah, but they said it in African language.
Okay.
And I think that's what feminism is. It's just teaching people that, look, actually, you have something really powerful to say, something really important to say.
Yeah.
Because for a really long time, we've been silenced. You know, I don't even know some of my own mom's views on just where is she in the world? Where is her place in the world? And for us to have a conversation amongst ourselves as women, where we're not interrupted, but you kind of allow the men to see into it and to see, you know, what are our experiences.
Well, we generally need you to keep quiet for most of it. But
you need to be quiet, need to listen in.
Okay, so it feels like we're trying to dissect the role of men, the role of men in trying to advance women's
rights.
Within feminism?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm hearing you can get a peek in, but you can't.
No, listening. If you're listening, you're not talking. That's the truth, right? Okay. So that's what we mean.
Okay.
Come, listen. Get to understand what's going on, but in that space where women are talking about their feelings, about how they're being oppressed, that's not your space to be like, but I need you to wash the dishes, but I need this, but I need that's not your space.
But not all men.
Right, but not all men.
Not all men.
Okay, just keep jumping in to say, I don't do that. I don't.
We know, which is why you're here. So just listen so that you can convert more of your own to be like you.
This sounds quite similar to some of the language around allies with the
whites. Yeah.
What is the role of an ally? And I'm sorry.
We all look at the
one white male.
Yeah. Everybody looks at Greg like, dude, jump in. What's the?
White presence is arresting. You know, I feel it arrests the space.
What do you mean by arrest?
So we all are not able to say. So if you wanted to say something, you'll doubt whether is this going to make Greg uncomfortable.
Is it going to offend
my
him?
Ability to speak freely.
Okay.
And I think even with men, it does the same. So in a feminist space, we're all trying to think, how can I say this in a politically correct way? And that's also what a white presence does in a black space. We're all just guarding ourselves too much, and sometimes it doesn't allow us to speak truth.
Right, and that's power. Not the space to be politically correct. It's the space to be truthful. It's not a hating space. It's just, this is what I'm going through. This is what my people are experiencing. This is what women are experiencing. Listen to us, acknowledge it, and let's figure out a way that we can deal with selves. We can't deal with the other person who is having an issue with what we're saying. Like, that's not the space.
And men need to create their own spaces also, you know.
Amen.
And they need to also call it feminism.
Okay.
So in that space, men need to be sitting down and talking and saying, we are feminists, because feminism is just believing in the equality, the social equality, economic equality of both men and women. So when are men going to sit and deliberate as to how are they contributing to the destruction or just the endorsement of patriarchy? And if they continue to endorse it, you know, why is that so?
I have read and heard that it's often the support that one might expect from black men towards the feminist struggle has really been lacking in a lot of cases, where at the beginning we're all united in sort of this black struggle, and then when it starts becoming around gender issues and LGBT issues, a lot of the support has been lacking. Is this something that you found?
Absolutely. I think even within relationships, you know, I find that there's a lot of teaching that needs to happen and kind of reprogramming especially the black male mind. I've never dated a white man, so I'm only speaking from that space. And really helping him to understand what it means to be a feminist male has been a daunting task, you know, talking to fathers, talking to your uncles, talking to your brothers, you know, people that you respect, but people who are also maybe oppressing you in some way, shape or form. That's a hectic conversation to have with them, and they don't usually take that message well. You know, I'm told to stay in my place. I'm told to know my role and shut my mouth.
It's quite challenging, you know. I do agree, especially there are instances where I don't know if I should stand up for myself or if I should allow my boyfriend to stand up for me. And he will also, he doesn't know what to do, because we both consider ourselves to be feminists, and I can't always, when I'm offended by a man and he says something that I don't agree with and we're together, you know, it's that, okay, so who needs to speak up? Does he need to speak up? Should I speak up? And it's constantly, we're both learning, you know, what does it mean truly? Sorry, what does it mean truly to be in a patriarchal world and to be people who, you know, are trying to reject that in all its forms?
Right, and navigate relationships.
I mean, it sounds like quite a tough conversation to have where you're, I'm assuming, have like a father or a boyfriend or a husband, and it's almost a conversation of trying to educate, but from a place of love and empathy and understanding why they are the way they are.
Right.
So it's almost, I know the society that has shaped you. I know why you are this way, but it's also,
and I'm sympathetic,
but it's
to
also
that.
Unacceptable.
Right, but I need you to fix that shit.
And the society the society has shaped me too. Oftentimes I behave in a way and I think, no, actually, this might be patriarchal. I might be a patriarch right now to myself.
Could you explain what you mean by that?
You're never fully woke. I just had this conversation on Twitter today, you know, because there was something I was reading. I can't recall what it was. But, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, Willow Smith, you know, she's taken on, she imitated a deity of some sort, and she's really offended a particular culture. And basically people are like, yeah, I thought that Willow was woke, you know, she's not woke. And I'm just like,
is that the thing where she's wearing a bindi or something?
Yes. Okay. And it's a deity that has many different arms and stuff like that. And I said, you know, you're never fully woke. Like, every day you are effing up. There's some way that you're effing up. You know what I mean? Like, you're striving towards that fully awake,
enlightenment,
space, enlightened space. But who's woke? Who is fully woke? Raise your hand.
And Willow's also a child, if I'm not. She's also quite young.
She's a child, and she needs to be taught. You know.
And I think also, how do you recognize people based on where they are in their journey. So if you meet somebody who, you know, is at step one, hypothetically, how do you not just tell them, listen, all your views are wrong. Read a book.
You suck.
Read a book.
Right.
And you know.
I mean, we are impatient. We definitely don't have the patience to teach. But I think then that's the beauty of Twitter, you know, because you just follow the right people. And I also feel that the things that I know now, I have learned outside of the classroom because it's so simple. It's simplified. It's not these big theories and philosophical language that you can't. That you struggle to grapple with.
Right.
So if you follow just the right people and they're able to practically tell you, actually, this is what, you know, the application of this theory looks like every day to me, I think it makes it a lot more easier.
It's essentially what the feminist Stockville has tried to do. That's essentially what it is. It's just trying to make it tangible in a space that's safe, but a safe that's safe and protected so that you can ask those questions that are seemingly stupid or, you know, not quite woke questions, but you'll get an answer. And we're just slowly affecting change in that space.
I think I'm going back to my silly question of separation between being on the ground and what seems to be a very sort of small subset. So you mentioned earlier, when I talked about feminism now being sexy and being sort of aligned closely with pop culture, and you said that's not what we are seeing on the ground.
Yeah, that's not what I'm seeing. Let me not speak.
No, that's fine. No. I just, what do you mean when you say on the ground?
I mean, on the ground, I just, okay, on Twitter, it's cool. It's nice to be a feminist and, Beyonce, woohoo, you know, but when it comes to actually doing the work on the ground, meaning, you know, making sure there's a safe space for women to speak, you know, making sure that you speak out against the silly campaigns that we have, that we see on Twitter, that are really not helping women fundamentally. Like, that's your time to speak out. That's not sexy. Nobody wants to do that. I'm constantly looking
at... Yeah, you're being the killjoy.
The people look at me as the killjoy. Like, damn, Kavuli, you're never happy. Like, what's wrong with you? No, I am a happy person, but... guys, really, I am a happy person, you know, but facts are the fact, you know what I mean? And people don't really want to hear that. That's what I'm finding. So it ain't too sexy. I'm sexy, but sometimes it ain't sexy.
Okay, for those not in studio, just take her word for it. We'll take a picture at the end of the show. I was talking to somebody quite involved in sort of the feminist space a few days ago, and she told me the stereotype of like an exhausted and angry feminist is not always so far from the truth, because it can be so exhausting.
Yeah.
Trying to always correct jokes or situations and trying to speak out here and speak out there, and it can be so exhausting, and you can be perceived as the killjoy.
Yeah,
it works though. You know, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who, he's a guy, so he went home for the June holiday, and when he came back, he said, "You know, when I was at home, I realized how much I've changed actually in my interaction with the women, you know, in the feminist spaces." So he was saying that his sisters don't refer to men by their first name. They always call them Buti, Spanbani, or Baba, Kabani. And with women, they call them by their first name. And he was saying how he had never observed that before, and it made him so uncomfortable. And he thought, why can't they just be free? This is oppressive. Just, it's in the language and what the language implies. Like, even, little boys, they have to refer to them with this sort of, there's a decorum that they need to use. And I thought, wow, you know, it's not useless. So it's not, you don't see the 1 million man march that we all thought we would have seen by now, but just the few conversations that you do have, and, you know, the patience that you do have with one person to say, I think you need to reconsider this, and they're able to go home and change, because, you know, the personal is political, and if somebody can go back to their family and start to modify their behavior in that space, that's what it needs to be. That's what feminism actually needs to look like. So I think when Kavuli talks about on the ground, that's the impact, is that people are able to take their own experiences and knowledge and start to think about their home spaces and challenge their fathers and sisters and mothers and, you know.
I hear you. I'm really interested about this idea of culture meets what we're trying to do here. But we just need to go through to a call we're just about to have. We'll be talking to Marcy Romaro, who's part of South African Young Feminists and was also part of the Roads Must Fall movement. Marcy, are you here with us?
Hi, how are you?
Good, good, good. Thanks for hanging on. I know we had you there for a second. Now, Marcy, tell us about the young South African Young Feminist and the work you're doing there.
South African Young Feminist Activist, OSAF, is a group of black feminist movement. It's a movement basically that's open spaces for young black women and young black feminists. And in our activism, we prioritize the experiences of black women. And we prioritize the experiences of black men and women to some degree when in a conversation about feminism. A lot of our work goes into empowering young black women, having conversations about things that impact black women, whether it's their daily experiences in the workplace, in the home, their personal interactions in their relationships, whether it's romantic, with their families and friends. So it's a safe space that we've opened for black women to be able to speak to one another and to support one another and to kind of change the stereotypes about black women being, you know, always been vengeful towards one another, always not wanting to see one another progress. So it's a safe space that we've opened for us to be vulnerable, to be able to encourage one another and to push one another forward.
I mean, that sounds incredible, especially that it's not only happening in the month of August. But Marcy, something I actually want to ask about is during your participation in the Roads Must Fall movement, there were some conversations happening around the alignment and sometimes disalignment between the racial transformation versus gender transformation and LGBT rights. And how did you see that play out in the movement and activists in the movement? Mm-hmm. When were they united and disunited along sort of these different struggles?
Yeah. I think when we started the Roads Must Fall movement, it was important for us to do things differently and learning from historical experiences, right? So when we started the Roads Must Fall movement, we called ourselves and we said that we're going to be an intersectional movement. And intersectionality is a theory or a school of thought that's part of black feminism, which speaks about the inclusion of all oppressed people. So looking at people as complete human beings and taking into account the things that oppress them, the factors that might be oppressive. So not just looking at their blackness, but looking at their social settings, looking at their class, where they're located, their abilities, their disabilities, and making that an important component of the movement. And also recognizing that people don't live single-story lives. And when you're an oppressed body, that can work itself out in different ways. So as much as we prioritized race in Roads Must Fall, it was important for us to prioritize gender as well. Because, for example, black women don't only face oppression through their race, but also through their gender. It was important to factor in sexuality, because sexuality is a big issue. The fact that black lesbian women are being killed in different townships and trans men and women are being killed in different settings is also an important issue. So it's about making DAO activism inclusive and making it and for us to be allies to the people who need our support and asking them and giving them a platform to tell their stories and say, this is your platform, tell your story and tell us what support we can provide you.
And I hear you. Do you feel that was successful? Do you think the regular sort of active in quotes activist crowd and sort of black conscious individuals, do you think they were receptive to this idea of intersectionality and were able to be a part of it?
I mean, I think as a movement, and also this is the work that SAF does, we know that it's a conversation. It's a conversation that has to be had, and it's not accepting, and especially with preconceived ideas of feminism being a Western idea and feminism originating in Western countries, which is not entirely true, because in your 1963s, women like Awa Tiang were writing feminist books in Senegal, in Africa. Mm-hmm. And so the contention has been around, what is feminism? Can we accept feminism and intersectionality? And it's been a lengthy conversation that's continuous, but people are opening up there is an understanding, and that understanding is important for us to be successful as a collective of people who are trying to reach the same goal.
Okay, I'm just want to make sure I understand you. So that there was some reception of, you know what I'm trying to do here, and you're bringing these sort of white ideas, these white feminist things. You're sort of infecting our struggle. Is that the kind of the reception that you got?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
I'm sorry. I want to make sure I understand you. When you try to introduce this idea of intersectionality, it sounds like some people felt you were sort of infecting the movement with these white ideas and taking feminism as a sort of a white thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was also about educating people about what intersectionality is, because intersectionality can only be credited to Black feminism. Black feminism and women like Patricia Hill Collins came with the concept of intersectionality. Mm-hmm. It's been grown by, we have women like Bell Hooks speaking into it. We also have African feminists or Black feminists like Pumla Kola speaking to things like intersectionality. So it was about creating understanding around it and explaining to people how they themselves need to look at themselves as intersectional beings, because each and every person is an intersectional being. There's a point where you can't look at oppression in isolation. Mm. Oppression is interlocked, and it's important to deal with oppression and not compare oppression saying, well, I'm Black, and so my Blackness should prioritize over my sexuality. The fact that I'm a queer woman, or the fact that I'm a woman should be considered more beneficial, the fact that over my class or my disability. We need to be dealing with oppression as a holistically and not just in isolation. And that's the understanding that we've tried to create in the movement. And it's been pretty successful so far.
It's really encouraging to know that this movement is going on everywhere. Like, I'd love to meet you one day. We should have coffee.
We should have coffee sometime.
There we go. All having coffee. I'm just inviting myself.
You know, I find it quite interesting that when we talk about feminism, we think of it in these white terms. And of course, maybe, you know, white feminists had the luxury to be seen as the people who coined feminism, because that was their oppression, that was their struggle, that was immediate to them. And it just shows that oppression in its form once included white women in it, and the right to vote, the right to equality, the right to equal pay at the workplace is something that obviously affected them directly. And I think then when you talk about intersectionality and why it's important is because these women did not see anything wrong with the oppression of Black people.
Right.
You know, that was immediate to them. It affected them. They don't care about anyone else or anything else. And I think what's interesting about Black feminism is that it stands up and it says, you know what, actually, enough. I need to not only be concerned about my own pain and my own suffering, I need to look at the world and see how can I use my position to alleviate the suffering of another person.
100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's those constant disputes. I always say to people, I don't understand if in Black spaces or however you want to term it, if the contention around feminism, if it's the feminist ideology or is it the term feminism, is it because we've taken the term feminism and we've used it alongside Black?
Yeah.
What is the contention around it? Because when you speak about Black feminism, and it's correct when you say that you don't just prioritize your own pain in the space of Black feminism, and you look at what Bell Hooks called white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, and that is not just a concept that impacts Black women bodies, but it impacts Black male bodies as well. And you start to, as a part of Black feminism, is being critical of those ideas of how not only is it impactful to Black female bodies, but how does it impact Black male bodies too? And in that way, we can't really say that Black feminism is a very exclusionary term. And yes, it does prioritize the experience of Black women.
Yeah.
But to some degree, when it is important, it is very critical of what is happening, the constructions around masculinity. Why is it important for Black men and women to have conversations around black masculinities and black femininities, right? Because it's a conversation that we all need to be having, and we all need to be thinking of it differently.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite painful, I think, to be a black woman, because you have to deal with yourself, and you have to deal with your son, your father, your brother. Mm-hmm. So you internalize also their experiences, because they affect how you relate 100%. with those people. Yeah. So I think as a black woman, it's quite difficult to say, you know what, I only care about myself, because it's impossible.
But
if
we've never been in a space to do that,
you know,
as well. We've been taking care of everyone. When did we ever have a chance to just focus on self? It's impossible.
Yeah.
Well, now it sounds like you're spending a lot of time trying to still take care of other people. And I'm not saying this to be critical of you, but a lot of this conversation has been educating other people who are, and
it's also educating ourselves as black women as well. It's not just about everyone else. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, going back to not being fully woke, you know, there's still things that we do. Every day I question myself. Every day I check myself on certain things, why I do certain things, how, Was that thought that I just had, you know, patriarchal? What was that? Am I being sexist? Yeah. You know, I question myself all the time. It just seems like we spend more time talking about white people and males.
And I think that's also important, because a part of black feminism is for black women to also be critical of feminism and also be critical of ourselves and saying, how do we perpetuate misogyny, how do we perpetuate patriarchy, and how we complacent in the settings that we are in, right?
Yes.
And also, if speaking into self-care, one of the biggest pillars of black feminism is self-care, self-preservation, the importance of self-preservation and looking at the self. Because, you know, as black women, our bodies, our lives, we're traumatized on a daily basis because of the experiences and the trauma, intergenerational trauma that we have to carry from our mothers and, you know, from the bodies that they carried and their trauma. And we are re-traumatized in the settings that we are in, because we are just trying to, you know, very different from feminism or Western feminism is about the fight for the survival of the black female body. Mm. And that is consistent around the world. If you go to the U.S., women like Sandra Bland, who is arrested and the next day she's found dead, right?
Yeah.
And it's the trauma that black women have to face, knowing that alongside black male bodies, our bodies are also in danger. And the fact that we have for many years had to take care of not just yourself, take care of the family and care for everyone else. And that self-preservation is so important.
Right.
It's so important, because it speaks directly to the self.
Mm. So I don't know if Kavuli was there when the Feminist Stockfall hosted the first film screening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they had Lenore.
Yes.
Mm, and it's quite interesting that you get this black woman who's trying to empower herself by getting a job. So she goes and she works as a domestic worker for this white family.
And who she ends dresses up, nicely, and she really cares for herself.
And they end up moving, so they go back to France. Yes. I think they went Congo.
Yes.
Is it Congo, Senegal, something like that. And when she gets to France, she finds that the biggest oppressor in that family makeup setup is the white woman.
The woman.
So that's the distinction, between white feminism and black feminism, is that sometimes, even in like the feminism, white women are the oppressors. Right. They are the enemy. 100%. So we can't all just bandy together. It's not possible, because they 100%. Have they have a white privilege. You know, you're a domestic worker and you're you're a subordinate
to
them.
Know your place.
It's quite an interesting thing, and that's the distinction that needs to happen in feminism, is that you need 100%. To also call out white women and say you need to take some responsibility for your complicity in just the 100%. Subordination of black women.
Right. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a space for black feminism.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think something that's very interesting that's been happening in the media lately, and that's really been speaking into the distinction between black feminism and white feminism, is, for example, the Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift issue, where Nicki Minaj was speaking about how black women, the entertainment industry, fails to empower black women, and they could be changing and making strides in whichever way. But she referred to the other girls who do the same and get empowered. And then Taylor Swift goes out and says, well, how can you throw so much hate to me? I've always loved you. And Nicki was like, wait a minute. I never once mentioned your name. And it's not even about you, right? And it's that idea of black women always having to, when it comes to the fight about or empowering women, it always has to be prioritizing the space of the white woman first and putting ourselves in the backseat. Similar to the Rihanna BBHMM video with the uproar around white feminists saying, oh, this is, you know, it's and recognizably, it's violence.
It is quite violence
to women.
Yeah.
And Maya McKenzie wrote a very interesting article around it and saying, yes, we have to problematize that Rihanna is inflicting pain on other women. But we also have to recognize that for once, what she's communicating is that for once, there's a black woman who puts her, you know, who prioritizes herself over the pain of a white woman. Mm. And that's important.
And they've always done that. They've always prioritized themselves. Yeah. And then all of a sudden 100%. It's like, oh no, but how can we differentiate ourselves? What's up with the separatist mentality? Yeah. But it's necessary because we don't share. Yes, there is a common experience, you know, gender is common. But not across the board.
Right. Yeah. And it's not a common lived experience, because the lived experiences are so different.
Yeah.
And like you said, there's an issue of privilege, right? There's an issue of privilege, and we're black women are positioned, and the fact that even in the same household, like you referred to the story now of the woman who was a domestic worker and moved to France, there's a clear power play of the black woman, a domestic worker, and she's working for a white woman.
Yes.
There's a clear power play. Although their sameness is around womanness, right? And the way that the world sees them as woman bodies. But the power play is very important, and that distinction is very important for us to recognize that we need to be opening up spaces for ourselves as black women, spaces that are empowering to us and spaces that allow us to be vulnerable and to be safe.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about Kylie Jenner now also, and how she had her cornrows in, and Amanda, you know what I mean? Amanda comes in and says, look, it's okay, right? So the problem with this situation all the time is that when black women have black hair and they have qualities associated with them, they're not celebrated, they're despised.
Right,
but you take
changed.
The same qualities and you put it on a white woman, and all of a sudden
trendy.
She's
of
trending,
course.
She's got cornrows on, she's a white girl, this is amazing.
She has big lips, she's got,
do you know what I mean? And
now
that is also the thing, is that they can, white women have that privilege that they can do things
of
that
course.
Black women do all the time ordinarily, and they become just top 100 sexiest this and that, and it's quite an interesting debate, you know, that cultural appropriation aspect to it as well, that they can dominate black culture. Iggy, for example, can dominate black culture.
Hi guys, what happened to Iggy? She's off the radar. Nobody likes her anymore.
They called her out.
Did anyone ever like Iggy?
We're talking
about
Iggy,
Iggy Azalea, right?
Yeah. Her career's over, guys.
Can I just jump in here and ask you guys quickly, although I've been trying to listen, one thing I want to ask is that all of the examples that we seem to be using today seem to particularly come from the States, and it seems like with a lot of these discussions, the examples to look at with these things and really gain traction on the internet and on social media comes from the US, and particularly pop culture in America, as well as, actually, you did mention some older films and things. But do we have the same level of debate around our own local examples?
In terms of cultural appropriation, or?
All sort of, in terms of feminism, particularly black and white feminism, are there the same level, is there the same level of critique in the South African context?
There is. Yeah. There is.
Yeah, Marcia, go ahead.
I think in South Africa, I mean, in feminist circles in South Africa, at least the circles that I've been, I think the debate is really there. It's important. It's a big debate. And even in SAF, we actively try to keep a space that's safe for black women, and a space that black women can frequent. And I think the only difference is that it doesn't gain as much media traction as it should, or rather, it's dealt with internally, right? It's an internal dynamic. And maybe that's a comment to how much education has to go into teaching people, South African women, South African men, about feminism and the importance of feminism. And I think that maybe the reason why it's much easier to use a U.S. example is because it's all over the internet and it's public knowledge, rather than having to say to you, oh, last week my friend and someone else, we were walking down the street. So I think that maybe it's a challenge for us to go out in the communities and teach about Black feminism and teach about the importance of, you know, having spaces that preserve the experiences of women, the experiences of Black women and so forth.
So I also think the other problem, you know, is that in South Africa for a very long time, we haven't been talking about race in the ways that we should have been. And in America, they've always been developing just even academia around experiences to do with race, even hair. There's a lot of, I was looking for some hair articles and there's hardly anything written by Black women in South Africa in the academic space. Whereas in America, you find that there is a whole just body of work around
their hair type
around
all that stuff.
Why hair type and also just certain airlines not allowing particular looks. And there's a whole body of work around that. And in South Africa, because we're so preoccupied with Rainbow Nation and nation building and reconciliation, we have actually stunted just the progress of a conversation around Blackness and feminism in a way that is truthful. So now we're trying to catch up. And fortunately, we have, you know, the conversations going on in the U.S. that can sort of move us forward.
Right.
But because of that, you know, because of just the silence or this dormancy for the past 21 years, I think it really has... Because there have been so many issues, you know, the code of conduct in schools that was so violent towards identities of Black women. You know, you're not allowed to have your afro at school,
kind
of dreadlocks. And now all of a sudden it seems like we're going on this wave from the U.S. when it's always been there. You know, we had school meetings after the assembly. If you had the wrong kind of hair, like all the Black girls would have to stay behind. You see, you kind
of make
your
an
afro's
example
out.
Of you.
You need to sort that out,
right?
And I'm actually quite glad that right now we're having the conversation because it can't wait anymore. It needs to be dealt with. It needs to be spoken about,
but it needs to be documented as well.
And it needs to be documented.
We need to get back to writing. We need 100%. To do these podcasts and recording of these videos, and it just has to happen because of exactly what you are saying, Anele, is that we just don't have a body of work to refer to. I mean, what will our children, our children's children, see besides just hearsay and, of course, Twitter?
Absolutely. Actually, speaking on Twitter, the people are just trying to write through to us.
Okay.
We have @PauseCandy who says, "Speak, do not be scared of white people."
Yes.
There we go. There's an Amandla in the studio. And we have, I'm trying to find the next one. Come on. It's somewhere here. Somebody says,
I saw Poncho, who's also part of Poncho Palani.
She is
also part of the feminist movement.
Okay.
She says, responding to the comment that our white presence is arresting, she says, "This is why #BlackGirlsOnly exists."
Okay. Yeah.
A strong yes from Kavuli.
For Black Girls Only. I think she's referring to For Black Girls Only. Is that what we're...
Just says #BlackGirlsOnly.
Okay, please tweet us again to give us an idea of what you're talking about. If you're just tuning in, this is the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. In the context of Women's Month and Women's Day coming up, we're just unpacking this idea of what Black feminism is and some of the issues with trying to be a Black feminist in 2015. Sorry, Greg.
And one more tweet shout out is OG Chimbi says, "The biggest challenge is getting all women to be for other women.
Right.
Then we can tackle the men."
So I guess back to this, I know some agreement and some disagreement.
It's a bit of a problem.
Okay, well, guys, with just a few minutes left, there's just one thing I do want to touch on. I feel like we're, again, this separation between the external and educating and externally. I'm quite interested in the internal journey, which has, I think we've not focused too much on. And Kavuli, you mentioned this before around, we are not all woke and we're all on this journey too. I suppose wokeness is the destination.
Yeah.
Could you just give us an idea of what is that journey? And perhaps what is it has been for you and some of the women that you've sort of walked it with, so to speak?
I think for myself, that journey has been towards true self-love. I think we talk about, oh, I love myself and, you know, I'm great and all that other stuff. But it's really about the things that you say to yourself, that you repeat to yourself in your head, and then how that plays out in your day-to-day life.
Okay.
For instance,
one of the ways that we entered the market, the feminist Stockville, was through these hair soirees.
Okay.
And it was a really fundamental and kind of obvious way for us to speak about self-care and self-love and how our hair is politicized and how it's just, we're just kind of picked apart all the time through our hair. And it's definitely that inward journey of understanding, why do I do the things that I do? How are my surroundings affecting those decisions? And what can change? What can be better so that I can affect the women around me in a more positive way?
Okay, I think as you mentioned, I think that's the one, right? That is, I feel like that is the road that needs to be walked. I just fear that people spend so much time explaining things to idiots like me, and it's like, it doesn't really matter if it gets anywhere or not.
You're not an idiot.
And, yeah. Okay. I'm blushing. You can't tell, like, but I'm blushing.
I mean,
sorry.
I don't want to be idealistic, but we have the capacity to love, right? We are able to lovingly teach and say, and I'm constantly even doing it with my dad. And sometimes I have to ask myself, am I being too hard on him? Maybe I, because someone will come to my house and my dad will be cooking, or he'll say, no, don't worry, I'll wash the dishes. And I'm just
that's
like,
that's amazing.
Okay, well, am I being really hard on my dad? Maybe
so
I should.
You would feel bad.
I do. And I don't know if I feel bad because I'm being unreasonable or if I feel bad because of conditioning. Just so, like, I'm conditioned to feel bad if my dad does something for me that is domestic in nature. Oh. So if he has a shovel in his hand, obviously that's fine. But if he's washing my plate, oh my God, no. And I guess it's that journey, you know, that Kavuli is talking about, keeping yourself in check and just knowing that he can, I can still love him and allow him to learn and allow him to wash the dishes and not feel compelled to say, no, but it's fine, let me do it. Because he is making the necessary changes also. And it's also, it's uncomfortable. So it's not a pleasant thing, you know, to have your dad do that for you. Like, I squirm in my seat, like, is this really happening? Am I being rude? Am I like a disrespectful Zulu daughter?
Sure.
You know, and it's just, it's those kind of things, those like cultural evolution that needs to happen, that is going on, but it challenges you also because of what you know and what you think you know, rather.
Okay, hey, sorry, Marcy, I know you want to say something. I'm just going to jump in there. We just have a few minutes to go. It sounds like we need to have another show on especially this idea of culture, and I'm having so much fun. I want to do something really cheesy and ask you all to leave us with just one thing. Okay. Women's Month has started. Clearly, a lot of brands and people are getting it wrong, and there's a lot of sort of very stereotypical, very often pointless sort of ways in trying to sort of appreciate or commemorate women, such as sort of wearing stilettos on the cover of a magazine. So what's, if you could sort of say one thing to everybody listening for this Women's Month and beyond that, or maybe something you think is useful, whether it's just a thought process or a conversation or anything like that you could leave us with. Kavuli?
I would say be very, very careful of the hidden misogynistic messages in these Women's Month, you know, adverts and marketing nonsense.
Yep.
I don't understand how a pink cocktail that's half price really helps the movement. But, you know, to each his own.
Okay, thank you. Anneli?
I would say accompany thought with action. Yeah. Yep. Accompany thought with action. And that action needs to be meaningful. It needs to not just be action for its own sake. So at the end of it, do you really think that this is going to challenge people's views about gender and patriarchy and power relations?
Absolutely. And Masa, anything from you?
Yeah, I think just extending on being critical on the campaigns for Women's Month, it's also being critical of Women's Month itself. Why do we have to really just prioritize women's issues in 1 month, right? Yeah. And it's this idea that we do it every day, but it's in this particular month, we celebrate women, we especially celebrate women. But we should be critical of that because it's not entirely true. It's not entirely true. And we have to be critical of campaigns that come out this month. It's the month that we're most vocal about domestic abuse, about intimate partner abuse. It's when, you know, we we look at women differently. And I saw an advert yesterday where somebody said, we're going to be coming around to people's homes and cleaning, and we're going to give women a break. What does that mean? How does that even challenge gender stereotypes?
Wow. That's reinforcing the stereotype.
Exactly.
So it's saying, we know you do this all the time, so we'll give you one day where you don't. Sure. And then next week you can go back to it.
Okay.
Right. I hear you.
So I think that's my final word, being more critical of it and being more active in bringing forward the message of women and saying that it's important that we prioritize issues, intersectional issues, on a daily basis and not just have one particular day or one particular month. We prioritize them.
Fantastic. Thank
Can
you.
Can I just...
Anneli wants to get one word.
One word. Mase, do you know Kondisa and Temba?
Yes, I do.
You do? I just met them this weekend and I am so excited that I've met you now. My circle of student activists and...
It's growing.
It's growing and growing, and I just wanted to say... I'm so happy.
This is going to be a big coffee date.
I know, right? Finally, I'm so excited.
I'll organize it.
So Sunday, I say hi.
Okay, fantastic. Okay. If you want to join this, you can tweet us. We'll be selling tickets at 500 rand a pop just to raise money for the next podcast. Guys, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. A big thank you. Kavuli Nyali, Anneli Nzimande, Mase Rumaru, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
To everybody tuning in, please, please check out The Feminist Stockville. Check out Good Hair Diaries. Check out Vanguard Magazine. And South African Young Feminists, of course. Please download the podcast and share it with all your friends. And we'll be back same time next week as usual. Thank you so much. CliffCentral.com